This is episode number 16 with Katrell Guidry. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Oh, hey there. Welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. In today's episode, I am kicking it with my very dear friend, Katrell Guidry. Now, Katrell is an uber-talented actor, writer, and producer who is a true testament to having grit when it comes to pursuing your dreams and to the power you gain when you stop taking things personally and release judgment of yourself and others. You know, when I met Katrell 5 years ago, we were in a leadership program together, and it was there that I got to witness Katrell open up to start healing his past. So Katrell grew up with a father who put drugs first and put him second. So as a kid, Katrell made up in his mind that he wasn't good enough to be first, and this played out for a lot of his life. And so in this episode, Katrell shares a lot of the incredible lessons he's learned as he's freed himself of his past and how he shifted into worthiness to come first, to get the part, and to not take things so personally, which has led to his success. Some of the things we chat about today are how sharing your story can create deep healing, how to release judgment to free yourself, why you shouldn't take things personally, the importance of listening more than you speak, how to get into the flow of abundance, the power in boundaries and speaking your truth, and Katrell's go-to practice to get out of an emotionally dark place, and of course, so much more, because you know it. Okay, so let's get moving with Katrell. Hello, hello, everybody, and we are back for another episode of the Rise Higher podcast, and I'm sitting here with my very dear friend, Katrell Guidry, who I love so very much.
Hello.
Katrell and I met, 4 years now?
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long. It's like, shoot, is there a cursing?
Sure.
it's been 2014.
Yep, 2014. So yeah. 4 years ago.
Yeah. Just about.
Yeah, and we met in a transformational workshop.
Yeah.
I still remember the day we met.
Yep.
And I was like, give me a hug. And you looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, I for a long time, I don't know, I just didn't like people touching me that I didn't know. I still kind of get that way sometimes. Like, why do you want to give me a hug? But I compress my judgments and I just look at it as like, yo, if I don't feel like giving this person a hug, I won't give them a hug.
Yeah.
If I do, then I'll give them a hug.
Yeah. Okay. I actually think that's brilliant. You know, seeing, just jumping in on that, you know, my brother has 2 kids, my niece, my nephew, who I love. And something that he's been sharing is, you know, as you're training your kids, most parents will say, oh, go give them a hug.
Yeah.
Instead of giving a child the option to say, do I feel safe to want to hug this person or not? And I think even as adults, we should have that option.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, and I can appreciate, you know, that was a transformational workshop about being open and, you know, no judgments, you know, the judgments you have for other people, you really have them of yourself. X, Y, and Z. So in that context, I can understand a hug, especially when I meet people that have just gone through, you know, I went to a barbecue and there was a bunch of people that had done the same workshop as us. And then there was a bunch of people there that had just got done with the workshop. And I'm walking in and I'm going to shake hands with people I've never met before. And they automatically go for the hug. And in my mind, you know, like I had my judgments flare up, like, dude, I don't like, why are you trying to give me a hug right now? You know what I mean? And then I'm like, all right, you know what? They just went through the workshop. I get it. Contextually, they were taught in that moment to be open and loving, and they want to give me a hug. So, okay. Oh, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's okay.
I will receive. I mean, I was a big hugger even before that workshop. I've done plenty of personal growth stuff to want to hug, but I think for me, it just feels like a new connection, but I absolutely respect when people want it or they don't.
Yeah.
So I know that you recently did an amazing short film,
yeah,
called Grimshaw. I got a sneak peek. I would know I wasn't able to share it with anybody else, but I watched it the other night and it was so inspiring, Cottrell. I would love for you to share.
Thank you, by the way.
Of course. I would love for you to share what it was about and again, what the inspiration was for it, if you can give that away.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, just a little bit of backstory. I'd been acting for a long time and you know, I've had a lot of close calls as far as like, you know, the verge of success. You know, there's been so many moments where, and I'm sure anybody can do this. Anybody does this in any career. It's not just with acting, but it's like, oh, if I get this one thing, it will change my life. And I've had a lot of those moments where it was like, I'm up for this role. If I get this one thing, it will change my life. And a lot of those moments, I didn't get them. Which is okay. And it caused me to write. And from there, I'd only written comedy. You know, I'd taken all the awkward experiences that I've kind of had throughout my life, whether it's been acting or whether it's just been a human being walking down the street. And I've, you know, I would write sketches for different companies. And this film is my first introduction into the dramatic space. You know, I guess it's not so much of fast food, you know, it, as well as content is going. It's easy to write a beginning, middle, and end joke, you know, with jokes in it and have a company go, oh, I could see the value in this. This was my introduction as not just an actor, as a filmmaker. But Grimshaw, the basis of it is... You know, growing up, I grew up in the 80s and 90s in Los Angeles during the crack cocaine epidemic, you know, and, you know, for people of color, mainly black people during that time period in Los Angeles, it was similar to, and I don't want to discredit this, but it was similar to the AIDS epidemic in the homosexual community during that time period. You know, people... I have my theories about that, but I experienced it firsthand. A very intelligent man, my father, who I've heard nothing but amazing things about, getting hooked on crack cocaine and the fact that people didn't realize how heavily addictive it was for individuals who got hooked on that drug. So, he passed away when I was 5, and I was, you know, there's certain specific moments that I remember in regards to his addiction. But this film, in a nutshell, is about if I would have continued to take his addiction personally and put it onto myself as my own and kind of go down the same path that he did. So you got a guy, the lead character, Brandon, who is drowning his sadness and his hurt and pain of never knowing his father through substance abuse. And then you got this guy, Sugar, who has a very regretful relationship with his past, trying to mend and redo his past. And you got these two men coming together.
And Sugar is the
co-star, co-lead of the film. I don't want to give it away, but so basically you have two men, one battling addiction, the other's battling his past. They come together to mend their broken relationship over a game of chess. Yeah, so that's the general concept of the film.
It's incredible. the storytelling in it, and just, I think there's so much power in expressing your past through art, which is what I experienced from your film, for the sake of healing as well as for the sake of supporting other people who may have gone through something similar.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, people, I've had, you know, we just got back from Mammoth Film Festival, which was a great moment for us to be involved with such like an amazing new festival, as far as the way it was put together and the type of content and the people that have that got to show at that festival. It was an honor to be amongst those filmmakers. A lot of the questions I was asked, because I played Brandon, was, did I bring a lot of my personal situation into the story and how I prepared for that, you know? And with every, you know, is a lot of the times people, you know, actors, I feel like the biggest mistake we can do is we can look at something and go, oh, this is me, right? And that discredits a lot of the other aspects and circumstances that this person on the page could have went through. It'll cause you not to dig. It'll cause you not to look deeper into the situation of why you would react this way as this person in this given circumstance. So when I approached this after I wrote it, you know, I of course dove into my younger brother's experiences with my father, of like, my brother doesn't remember anything about my dad. He was only 16 months younger, but he really just doesn't remember. And he also, you know, I was the older one, so my dad would bring me with him sometimes and my brother would get left behind. You know, so there was a pain in that for him, as well as my brother, you know, is a recovering addict, you know, 10 years sober, you know, amazing, functioning, thriving human being in society now. But there was a time where he was in and out of jail from the age of 18 to 22, you know, he's serving 1 month, then 3 months, then 10 months, and understanding what an individual like that could go through in that circumstance. And then also outside of just my, that's my, if you can hear that, that's my puppy in the background anyway.
It's a little rustling and...
Lola, calm down. And then outside of just my brother's experience and my experience, I had a producer on this who is familiar with this world, and he suggested that I go to Al-Anon as research. But I also understand that there was a greater purpose at hand for me to have that experience, and to be in a room filled with people that understood what I went through, like truly could empathize and have compassion with the fact of how hard it is to have a loved one, a spouse, whoever, a best friend, whoever it is, somebody that you're very close with and that you love deeply, battle addiction and be a bystander in that. It is very heartbreaking, and I had never been in a room where it was filled with other people that could understand that circumstance, and that was very healing. For those who don't know what Al-Anon is, Al-Anon is an organization that works the 12 steps, but the basis of it is you're not directly an addict. Some addicts do go, but you're not directly an addict. You're just somebody who's been deeply affected by a loved one, you know, whether it's a parent, a sibling, a lover, or a best friend who was battling addiction, and you were a bystander in that situation, and how deeply it hurt you seeing somebody go through that, or the type of things that you accept in your life. You know, for me, it was a lot of self-worth issues, but that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, so I kind of combined all of those experiences, a little bit of my own, my brother, and then hearing other people share their stories about what it was like for them to deal with an addict. And then I attacked the role that way.
So let's get on that conversation about the self-worth stuff. I know you said, well, that's a whole nother one. What was it that you personally discovered while you were going to these Al-Anon meetings for yourself?
You know, there's a concept. Yeah. I conceptually understood the fact that it wasn't you know, my issue was my dad's issue. It wasn't mine. And I conceptually understood the fact that it wasn't my fault. But there was, there's something you learn, especially as a kid, when you, are supposed to be first in your parents' eyes and you are second to a substance or you're second to a girlfriend. I mean, it happens in so many different ways. It's not just in addiction. You know, I've heard stories about, people talking about like, my mother chose her boyfriend over me, or my father chose his girlfriend over me, or he chose his work over me. There's a story that one could make up about that. And mine, I made up that, I wasn't good enough to be first. I went through life taking what I could get in friendship, in relationship, in work. It was take whatever's presented because you're not, you know, you will always be second. And of course, I never said that to myself, but it was just proven in the results of my life. I could see it everywhere. I could see it when I would have a girlfriend or...
that you'd be second?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. type of jobs that I would, you know, this person would... you know, be the face of this and I would be in the background, whatever it may be. It was apparent in my results of how I truly really felt deep down inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting because, you know, when we're kids and we're just forming our conscious mind, it's still not developed. So when we're trying to perceive and understand our world with a forming conscious mind that messes up a lot of information, we start to misperceive things like what you shared, that I'm not important, or not, I'm not enough, right?
Yeah. And also a lack of boundaries because, no matter what happened to me, it wasn't nearly as bad as this. And I didn't even think that, and when I speak of that, it was, you know, the situation I grew up in, it wasn't nearly as what one would call bad as that, but I didn't even look at that as bad.
You didn't look at your childhood?
No, because I was a kid and I had amazing moments. I had fun moments. Like, you know what I mean? I was talking about it with my friend the other day, you know. It's why people say ignorance is bliss. When I was a kid, I thought everybody believed in God. When I was a kid, I thought most people's parents passed away at the age of 39 or 30. I think he was 37. I can't remember. When I was a kid, you know, I thought it was normal that my mom filed bankruptcy twice. I didn't know. You know what I mean? That's all I knew. So... for me, that's just kind of, you kind of form that way of thinking, it'll spill over into your adult life. You know what I mean? Like that, but there's more than that.
Yeah. But then that's the thing is we start to perceive, or what we witness and what we model. She just grabbed my flip flop and is running away with
it. Yep.
What we witnessed when we were growing up, we think that that's the model of the world. That's how we should live our lives. And also, again, those stories that we made up about ourselves and about the world from a conscious mind that's just forming, we obviously create a lot of misperceptions, which then those misperceptions get locked in as beliefs. And then we continue to carry it out in our life and reinforce those negative beliefs. And, you know, for you, because we've talked so much about it and seen how, even though you thought, well, no, wait, my childhood was great, what you believed from that time really impacted what you chose, your decisions that you made as an adult, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And then now, what was it that you learned for yourself? Like you saw, okay, it wasn't my fault, your dad's decisions, and that you are a valuable human, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, what shifted for you?
In regards to making the film or prior to making it, what do you mean?
Yeah. No, I love the film, but I'm deep diving into your personal story, my friend.
Oh, okay. you know, with consistent work, I guess it's, you know, it's, and I don't want to, everyone, oh, you are enough. You're enough. You know, it's like people always say that all the time. Oh, you know, like you're enough. Love yourself, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that stuff. And I guess like you know, what I learned was I really, you know, as much as I could speak the positive language, as much as I can look at the mirror every day and say, I love you, or whatever type of little things people want to do, I just learned to take unbiased inventory of my life and go, okay, look, do my results match my dreams? Do my results right now match my dreams? And if they don't, it's okay. What's missing, or what's not, you know, what's not getting nurtured? And, and also understanding that whatever room that I enter into, I deserve to be in that room. And I'm not just talking about work, because there's an intimidating, you know, like with this film, I've been invited to, I've been going to events as a guest a lot for a long time, but I've never been invited as the person that people want to meet. And now that's starting to happen. And there's still an intimidation level there for me because of how I feel about, do I belong here? You know, I'm with these people. They seem very affluent. Do I belong? But it's like, no, I've worked hard enough, and it has nothing to do with my self-worth. It has nothing to do with the fact that because I'm in this room, I'm worthy. Let's correct that. What I'm saying is every room I enter into, whether it's a McDonald's or it's the White House, I belong in that room because I'm there. And if I wasn't, that's the biggest thing for me. Like, I'm in this room because I'm supposed to be in this room. That's
not
it.
A matter of whether you're worthy or not to be in the room. You're in the room because you're supposed to be there. And guess what? Your results show you're in the room.
Exactly. And it's that simple. And that's the unbiased neutrality that I've learned to look at my life from. Because I used to take everything so personally. And that was, that's okay. So to round it out, that's the biggest thing I've learned, is to not take everything so fucking personal.
So when you chose not to take things so personally, what has shifted for you in your life?
I think the biggest thing is I'm not trying to fit into a box that I think people want me to be in. It's inauthentic. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people put on a face, whatever career they're in, or whether they're starting a new relationship, people put on a face. They put on what they think the person that they're speaking to would want them to be. And the biggest difference for me is I finally have an opinion. And people respect the fact that I have an opinion. You know, I was talking to a very big photographer about doing an event and with my film, and he was like, well, we'll do it at this place. And he was like, it'd be cool. I've done an event where we had an elephant present. I think we should have an elephant. And for me, like back in the day, I would have been like, just because I'm talking to this particular guy, I would have been like, oh yeah, man, that sounds great. Awesome. Blah, blah, blah. For me, what came to mind was when I was in Thailand on an elephant reservation, watching these beautiful creatures who are brutalized when they're in captivity a lot of the times. I'm like, yo, like, I don't think I want to have an elephant because I don't want people to want to ride it. I don't want people to just be touching the elephant all day. I'm like, what are we going to be doing with this elephant? It's laughable to me now because, most people wouldn't think of that, I don't think. But the fact that I'm talking to this huge photographer about having an event based around, you know, my film that could be seen by all of his people who are very affluent and at a place that's very, you know, glamorous, covered by you know, this or that magazine. And I'm like, yo, like, I don't want to hurt the elephants. And that could sound stupid to most, but like, that was the first thing that popped in my mind. And I said it, and I was like, wow. And those are little moments like that lets me know that I'm on the right track. You know?
Yeah, you're speaking up for things that matter to you instead of just going along with it because of who that person might
exactly.
have been to you in the past. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Wow. You know? I mean, and that even goes for work. I was up for a job that, you know, I guess because of the network it was on, it would have been like a cool credit to have, but I would have lost money on it. And like, for me, it just wasn't worth it. So I was like, no, I'm okay with that. I'm good. You know,
as you've been speaking up for things that matter to you, and actually what I'm hearing too, is that you're kind of acting more in alignment with your values of like who Cottrell is versus who Cottrell's face would have been, right? To please people or to get people to like you or to belong.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a shift of results in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I've learned to not talk as much and just listen. And it's funny because I've had people who work with this company or that company who are on what one would call like a high level explaining to me why X, Y, and Z would be good, because I'm just letting them spin their wheels and talk and just letting it happen. And in the past, I would have been trying to convince them why I'd be good for this particular opportunity. And now they're trying to convince me of why it would be good for me to be a part of this opportunity. And like little moments like that have been coming up, you know? And then just energetically of, it's attractive to have values. It's attractive to have boundaries. It's attractive to speak your mind, and people aren't always going to like what you have to say. And it's exhausting to try to make everybody like you. It's really exhausting. Yep. You know, I went and saw Hamilton. I love musicals, and my girlfriend and I were in New York, and I was able to score some tickets through one of our friends, Betty, who knew a girl that was in the production, and we had amazing seats. And I was just excited to be at a musical, but I also did learn something. You know, there was a part where I think Aaron Burr was running for president. And at that point, him and Hamilton were friends, but Hamilton didn't, you know, Burr was very well liked by the community. He hung around in all the right circles, but Hamilton could not endorse him because he didn't know what Burr stood for. And I was like, wow. And you know, it's one of those moments, I'm getting chills talking about it, but how can you trust somebody if you don't know what they stand for? You know, I can sit there and talk to a hardcore Republican or whatever, you know, whatever you want to subscribe to, party, whatever. But I can sit there and talk to a hardcore Republican going like, you know what? I think I love guns because X, Y, and Z. I don't think I'm racist, but I believe that we should be separate because of X, Y, and Z. I believe that, you know, everybody in America has a fair chance, and my dad worked himself up to this level because of this, and I did the same thing, X, Y, and Z. I may not agree with him, but I can trust him because I know exactly who he is. And I don't have to agree with him, but I can respect and trust him because I know exactly, or her, because I know exactly who that person is. And I think that's what generates results in life.
Do you feel that Well, then now, I mean, clearly if you're speaking up, you're feeling people are trusting you because, and it sounds like it, because if people are now trying to say, hey, I want you to be a part of this, instead of you selling yourself, they feel they can trust you, right? And then the second piece, do you find that you're trusting yourself more because you're also owning your value and using your voice for what you stand for?
100%. But that's, yeah, and that took years to figure out because I had to sit down, you know, so many, you know, I've been blessed to have great mentors, one of which, you know, I still talk to. He's one of my best friends. He's my mentor now, a guy named Judah Isron. But, you know, as work with, you know, as I, for instance, I had a year where I did so many commercials. Like I booked so many commercials. And for me, I was like, yes, this is great. I was making money booking commercials. And then it just, but he was the only, you know, and everybody was like, you know, I'd posted on social media like, yay. And everybody was like, oh, Cottrell, yeah, man, you're working all the time, man. You're killing it. You know, it's just perception. And then I have him going, who are you? Like, there's no, like, where's the consistent, like, what do you want to do? What are you trying to do? If you want to be that corny commercial guy, awesome. Be that dude and own it. But don't say you want this and continue with that. Like, what are you doing? So I'd always have to, I'd sit down and I'd be like, all right, where's my boundaries? Where do they lie? And like, and then slowly it kind of built up, you know, the agent would call, hey, would you do a cigarette campaign for $13,000? I don't smoke cigarettes.
Smoke. Yeah.
It's like, and not, no judgment on people who do. If you want to kill yourself, that's your deal. But I don't smoke cigarettes. How am I going to endorse it? And then I have friends who are health coaches that have done cigarette campaigns who don't even drink alcohol, don't smoke. They do that. Little moments like that would come up for me. It's like, you know, I did one big pharmaceutical commercial and I'm super grateful for the fact that, you know, the amount of money I made from it, and I was able to get healthcare X, Y, and Z. You may have to cut this out later, but I turned after I did that, and then I saw, you know, how Congress voted that they didn't want to export prescriptions from Canada to make the cost for prescription drugs much less. I'm like, yo, I can't do a pharmaceutical. I don't agree with that. I think everybody should be able to have access to healthcare. I can't do another pharmaceutical. There's no way, you know? So
sticking to your values is a very important thing. And I think so often because we're afraid, whatever fears might be there, we'll betray ourselves for the sake of trying to get love, trying to make money, you know, trying to belong, whatever that might be. And I think there's so much power in, like you're already saying, standing for something, sticking to it, knowing that when you do, some people may or may not like you. But you know what? People may or may not like you all the time anyway. You can't control it. So you might as well, as best you can, deep dive into who the heck am I?
Yeah.
And how can I live congruently? How can I live in alignment with what I believe in? Not what someone else has told me, not what I thought I needed to do to get love or to fit in or to feel good enough, but what feels best to me. Because at the end of the day, you're with yourself all day long.
Yep.
And that builds that trust. You know, when you mentioned one of the biggest keys for you is not taking things personally.
Yeah.
How does one start that practice? Like, what did you do?
You know, I read this book a couple years ago called The Way to the Superior Man.
So good. David Dida.
Yeah, David Dida, if that's even how you say his name. Mm-hmm. but I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's this moment in the book where he's talking about how husband and wife, they wake up in the morning and they're feeling great about the relationship. They give each other a kiss. Maybe they make love, whatever it is. And they decide that they're going to go on a date after the husband gets off work. So the husband goes to work, he leaves kind of early or he leaves in a timely fashion so that he could get home because he's so excited to see his wife. and he wants to take her out and, you know, take her on a date and have a great time. And the second he walks in the door, he's like, "Hey, babe, are you ready for the date?" And she just immediately goes, "I don't want to go anymore." And he talks about how the superior man, or the less superior man would take that personally. You know, "Why? You said you wanted to go earlier. What's your problem? Blah, 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 blah." Get all upset. And the superior man would simply go, "Hey, what's going on? Let's go on a date." You know, and I feel like that applies to anything. You, like, especially in regards to people. I cannot control other people. I can't control how they act towards me, but I can control my reactions towards them. And I never know what's going on in somebody else's life.
Yep.
Ever, you know, and who am I to say that everything is about me?
None of it is. Well, sometimes it is if you're a trigger for someone, but usually that's still not even about you, but about something from their past.
Yeah, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that just really embodying that is what's in, and of course I have my moments. Everybody does. It's a constant, you know, life is, every time I think I've arrived, I learned that I have not, you know?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. So many times I think I have, and the next thing you know, I have like a crazy outburst of anger or sadness. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And it's just old wounds that still need attention and love.
Yeah.
You know, with the stuff with Al-Anon, was there any other big lessons that you got from being in a room with people who understood you?
I think, you know, it's, I think the difficult part about it also is, you know, I'm a firm believer, that if I'm judging other people, I'm really just judging myself. To really just sit down and listen, understanding everybody has a story, with no real opinion about it, just being with people that have a story, you know. And if I'm judging them, I'm like, who am I? I'll check myself in a moment where I'll hear somebody talking about something and I can feel the judgment coming on. I'm like, wait, what the fuck are you doing? This person's just talking about what they're going through. Who am I to judge them about that? You know, and it's a split second. It happens a lot. But that's been, I just learning, you know, I can go around, oh, I'm not a judgmental person. You know what I mean? I'm not going to speak for everybody else, but yeah, there's moments where I'm judging what I'm hearing. I'm judging what others are doing, but it's like, yo, like, can't that person just live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're built to judge good, bad, right, wrong. I like, I don't like, you can't stop it.
Yeah.
But are your judgments impacting you in a positive or negative way? Right. When we sit there and judge other people in a negative judgment, we feel that energy in our bodies.
Yeah. You know, I can have an opinion about something, mm-hmm. but I think the judgment's personal, opinion isn't.
Say more about that.
If I'm sitting there judging something, that means I'm looking at it from right, wrong. I like this, I don't like this. So that issue lies with me. You know what I mean? Opinion is, it's as simple as like, oh yeah. You know, I gave this example the other day. I could be with somebody who I could drive down the street with, you know, a friend, and we could both go, hey, we're hungry. And I can go, oh, where do you want to eat? And my friend could go, oh, I want to go to McDonald's. And I could sit there and go, ooh, you fucking eat McDonald's? You're fucking gross, man. Do you know what that does to your body? Oh my God. Like, that's probably why you look the way you do, is because you're eating McDonald's, blah, yada, 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 yada. That's me judging them. That's my opinion of if I ate McDonald's, that's how I would feel about myself. If I ate McDonald's, that's how I would appear to look in my brain, opposed to, you know what, I don't really eat McDonald's. Is there any other place you want to go to? Mm-hmm. And it's that simple.
It sounds like there's so much neutrality in that. Like, it's not right or wrong. It's just what it is for you. I don't really eat that. So can we go somewhere else?
Yeah. And I think, you know, that goes back to taking things personally. I'm learning to be neutral in all circumstances. And instead of trying to convince somebody to believe what I believe or convince them to do what I want them to do, I can either, they're either aligned or they're not. And I can walk away from the situation or stay in the situation in integrity.
Mm-hmm. I totally feel you, because I've actually been going through something personally that's riled me up a lot inside.
Oh yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Let's go there. Let's go for a second. Just as a, well, just as like a quick side to reiterate that, you know, I was dealing with something with a friend who in my mind, was not taking responsibility for something, mm-hmm. and it was negatively impacting me in my life. And when we had the conversation about it, it blew up into an argument where, again, still not, no responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so my head started spinning into all these gnarly places of what I wanted to do or how wrong they were and this and that. And basically I've been dealing with my own health issues and I'm working with a doctor, and she said this, she's like, look, first of all, your body's in crisis and you don't have the energy to fight. That person is playing in the dark. When you're sitting here with all your judgments and what you'd want to do and how you'd want to fight, you're actually going in that energy as well.
Yeah.
You're playing in the dark. Can you stick to the light?
Yeah.
And for me, the neutrality or the peace, I think that we all want to feel is like, how can we still be grounded within ourselves? Stop blaming other people. Cause that's where I was going. I was in blame. I was in anger. I was like trying to be right, which I'm still working on that sometimes, like letting go of the need to be right. But it creates like such negativity within us and in the scenarios in our life. So, you know, talking about the going neutral on things, or at least for me, one of my, you know, best friends, when I come to her with a negative situation, the bottom line of wherever she tries to carry me is, Stephanie, can you stick to the light?
Yeah.
And that feels so much better. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, of course, sticking to the light and, you know, this is something I learned. Also not being so mad about where that person's at.
Totally. Well, and that's the sticking to the light part. Is actually, for me to not drag my own self into the darkness, as I was saying, it's not the other person doing it to me. I was choosing that.
Yep.
That when I was able to take a step back and see it for what it was, and know that if that person's not ready to take responsibility, can I take responsibility? That's me sticking in the light. Can I stop judging them and see, wow, what's actually happening on their side? What happened, you know, even when they were kids and in situations like this, they were watching the person who, you know, they were modeling after handle conflict in this way.
Yeah.
I know, same thing for me. When I was a kid, we yelled a lot in our house.
Yeah.
So old me, and still sometimes it emerges when I get into conflict, I'll yell. And it's not where I want to go, but I see that's the automatic response. So it's taken so much awareness to catch that so that I can consciously choose a response instead of just reacting from how I was conditioned. And when I can actually respond, I choose to come from the light, which is I don't need to yell. I don't need to get angry. I don't need to judge this person. I don't need to be right about how I think they're wrong. And I can meet them where they're at and see, gosh, you know, what's going on within them that's creating this.
Yeah.
And one question I always ask myself when people are coming at me in like not such a good way that would normally cause me to react, I always ask this question in my mind, what happened to you? Hmm. I think that in my mind, because when I do, it drops me into my heart and allows me to be compassionate for this person. Because again, we both know this, usually how we are reacting to things is based off of what we saw or what happened to us from the past.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little more compassionate than I usually.
Yeah.
I just, you know, thank you for that. I'll take it into my inventory. Mine's been more along the lines like, that's not mine. It's yours.
Okay, different energy, but does the same job, right?
Yeah. You know, I do like the compassionate aspect of it though, to add, you know, what's going on? Yeah. What happened?
What happened to you?
Yeah, happened to you? What's going on? You know. I can understand that.
So I can't wait to see Grimshaw, Cottrell, and I know that has that been a healing path for you? It sounds like it has.
You know,
creating that film.
It has, more or less, in the aspect of understanding, understanding that I deserve to have a career, or I'm capable to have a career. You know, I've done a lot of work around that subject. And of course there was, you know, I did have some healing from doing the film. I think also, you know, learning to not care what people would think while watching the film, mm-hmm. you know, there's a certain level of vulnerability. And then also, you know, if I'm really going to be a true artist, I get to be authentic and I get to be vulnerable. You know, it's the best actors are the ones that will immerse themselves into a circumstance and allow everybody to see them naked. Mm-hmm. You know, and how can I call myself an artist if I'm not willing to do that? You know, aside from all the past stuff that's been worked on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sounds like you're getting naked. No, but I actually want to acknowledge you too for the level of commitment that I have to your dream. You know, I know you started out as an actor, you're still acting, but as you shared, and I've seen in your Instagram, which is, you guys go follow Cottrell on his Instagram, which will have all the information on how to do at the end. But you have such inspiring posts where you share that, you know, you didn't make it just by someone choosing to give you the part, that you're like, my dream is to be an artist and to make a living at it. So, okay, if I'm not doing it by simply auditioning and showing up and having them choose me, I'm going to take my career in my own hands. I'm going to start writing. And I remember meeting you, you know, in Hollywood at one of those cafes when you were writing.
Yeah.
To now producing and doing all this cool stuff. Like, you're making your art regardless of whether people are choosing you or not, because it's an expression of you. And it's so powerful to see that.
Yeah. I think it's, there's also an acceptance with that, because I think it was the lady that wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert. She had a book called The Gift or something. I can't remember.
Was it Big Magic?
Big Magic, that's the mm-hmm. one. And she was talking about, you know, being given a moment of genius and not squandering it, you know, acting on it fast, because when something, you know, something arises, it will come out in one way or another. And I've really come to grips with, you know, for a while, when I first started acting, I just didn't book work. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, fear of what others thought. You know, you walk into a casting office and all I'm thinking about is being judged by whoever's sitting in front of me. And I used to get so nervous. And then when I was in acting class, I'd do a great job. And then I'd go into the casting office, that my dog's drinking right now. I'd go into the casting office and I'd get so nervous. And I had an opportunity to go into the Funny or Die offices a while back, because I had a famous friend who was having a sketch produced around them. And they brought me in because they thought I was funny. So I blurted out an idea, and Funny or Die, they took the idea and they made it and they gave me credit for it. And then I wrote another sketch and they liked it and I was able to star in it. You know, it was pretty, you know, budget shot at the Funny or Die offices. And I kept having these little moments with my writing. And for so long, I had this fear around writing because I thought maybe if I write, maybe I'm not meant to be an actor. I was looking at it as such like a linear, you know, you can only do one type of thing. And to be, you know, especially as a man of color, you know, you feel like there's not enough spots out there for you. You know, we in 2018 is a very magical time. I'll touch more on that after I'm done with this little anecdote. But I've been learning to embrace the natural gifts that I feel I've been given. That it's a greater purpose that has been instilled in me, so that if I don't write, you know, if I don't create stories, I'm squandering the gifts that have, you know, been naturally bestowed upon me. And I feel like that's where a lot of people make mistakes. There are a lot of people out there who have dreams, and I feel like they like the idea of the dream better than the dream itself. And they will ignore certain things that the universe or God, whatever you want to call it, they're handing over to you on a silver platter. And it's like, I don't want to do that because I do this. In reality, that may serve.
Yep, your ultimate dream.
Yeah.
Your vision.
That'll serve it, you know? And it's been, you know, I've only, to wrap this part up, I've mainly only written comedy and that people have seen, and starred in comedy stuff that people have seen. And the second I embraced this story, as it hit me while I was driving like a ton of bricks and pitched it and got it on paper, was the moment where I could I've been able to have the space or a lot of the space to do some of the best work as an actor and as an artist that anybody's seen from me, you know? Yeah.
I love it. Embrace your gifts, your natural talents, instead of ignoring them. And I think so often we can have an idea of what it is we're supposed to do, and we get so myopic in our focus that we miss out on so many other beautiful things that could open up for us, that could be additional pathways that are still getting us to where we want to go.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple people I admire, you know, I feel like every Black actor, writer, producer admires at the moment, you know, the Lena Waites and the Donald Glovers and the Issa Raes, you know what I mean? I've had the pleasure of talking with both and working with Issa in the past. But, you know, this is a magical time period where, you know, not just white people are creating the space for themselves to do it all. You know, I was talking to Lena about her as an actor, and she never saw herself as an actor. She was always a producer and writer, and she put herself in, you know, because of her talents, she was able to enter into the, you know, great circles. And next thing you know, she's being suggested to be on Masters of None. You know what I mean? And she ends up writing an episode and winning an Emmy. I think she might've won a Golden Globe for that too, that episode. And I mean, outside of that, she's created one show that she's not even on that she wrote and created. And she created another show that she wrote years ago when she wasn't quote unquote Lena Waithe, that I just saw got picked up today by another network. And she's about to be in a big movie as an actor. So it's like being open to these opportunities and understanding that one can serve the other, or, you know, just because it doesn't look like this at the moment doesn't mean that something else won't pop up. Another, you know, gift or talent won't pop up that will serve what you ultimately want to do.
Amen to that. So that is so key to share that, yeah, stay open and trust yourself along the way and just say yes and see where some of those paths lead you, because that's such a powerful story that you shared of if Lena didn't open herself up to her other gifts and start sharing that, that the world would be missing out on some pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. And also, what can you give? Like, you know, what do you have to offer? Nobody's going to give you anything. It's what can you provide? And we live in a world where with checks and balances, you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, some people don't want to subscribe to that, but when you come at it from a place of service, that's when everything kind of unfolds for you.
I 1,000% agree. So on that note, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much so far for all the goodness, Cottrell. But I've got 3 questions for you.
Okay.
That I ask all my guests to close out the episode. The first is, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
So I feel one of the most unique things about me is the fact that I was extremely overweight as a kid. And, you know, now I'm 6'1". I'm slim. I have cheekbones. You know, I've been, you know, represented for modeling for many years. You know, I understand I look a certain way now. But when I was a kid, I was fat till about 14. And what that really taught me was I didn't exclude people because of their looks. I would more or less exclude people because of their character. And I really gave people a chance to get to know them, because a lot of the times I wasn't allotted that chance because I was, you know, I was the fat kid, you know? And I also learned how to tell jokes, see things as funny, you know, when you're overweight and there was some vanity in me. I wanted to be popular, and I learned how to have a good personality. And that really supports me in my life now. You know, people, because of the way I look now, people don't expect me to be who I am. And I learned that because I was very overweight as a child.
How to respond to that moment. Hold on. there's probably so many other things that we could have deep dove into that about in this episode, but we'll have to table that for another one.
Yeah.
But so good. When you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
I'm learning not to swallow it. If I'm in a dark place, it's more about me understanding what got me to that place, opposed to trying to say some affirmations or say I love myself in the mirror. I'd rather get to the bottom of it to understand what brought me to that place. And once I do that, then it's easier for me to move on. And as I've, you know, learned how to, you know, incorporate that practice into my life, that has caused me to learn how to shift faster.
Beautiful. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 10-year-old self?
Never take anything personally. Don't put any limitations on your dreams, because anything can happen. And love yourself.
Boom. Cottrell, thank you so much for sharing your heart and all your wisdom on this episode. And I appreciate you so much. You're such a special gift in my life and to so many people. And your art is transformational. I cannot wait for more people to get to witness Grimshaw.
Thank you. And you as well for me. 100%.
Thanks. Love you.
Love you too. Thank you.
All right, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I love how much Cottrell emphasized how not taking things personally was a game changer for him. I mean, that is huge. It's a huge one that gives you so much power when you can fully embrace it. When you stop taking things personally, we stop giving certain people power over us. And, you know, we stop allowing them to dictate how we feel, we experience freedom, and we trust in what we know to be true about ourselves, and we define ourselves on our own terms. All right, so to close this out, you know, if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, pretty please share it with them. And if you got value from this episode and you want more, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And I would be so grateful if you'd leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And as always, I got a free gift for you. If you haven't already downloaded it, you wanna download my free self-love kickstart. Because I really believe that self-love is the key to everlasting happiness, to unconditional love, and to having anything and everything you want. And so I've got this special gift for all of my listeners. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. And so finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for links to connect with Cottrell, you can check it out in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP16. And you can also check out my other podcast episodes there too. Okay, guys, until next time, I'm sending you so much love.